Readers Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Hello, and welcome to Readers Entertainment Radio. I'm your host, Sheila English. For our urban fantasy lovers out there, I have something truly unique. I'm going to start by reading the synopsis from the author's website. You guys are going to love this. Things are looking up for Dakota Frost. New child, new house, and new car. But when vicious magical graffiti begins targeting vampires and werewolves, starting with her friends, everything starts to fall apart. As the attacks mount up, so does the mistrust of the vampires, the werewolves, and even the police, leaving Dakota caught in a triangle of jealousy between her ex-girlfriend and a new vampire who may want more than just her blood. Soon, only one option remains. She must swallow her pride and ask for help. She must return to her old skin-dancing mentor. She must return to Blood Rock. The title is Blood Rock, and the author is Anthony Francis, who's here with us tonight. Welcome, Anthony.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm glad it's not snowing because I'm here in Kentucky. You're out in California, right?
I'm in San Jose, which I moved to just prior to starting the Dakota Frost series. Although the ideas were in my head before I left, I didn't really get it started until I moved out here.
Well, and we're going to talk a little more about that here pretty soon. Now, before we go too far, I do want to let our listeners know that this is a pre-recorded show, but we will go ahead and leave the live chat open, and we do have somebody there who, if you have questions, can give you some basic information. We'll make sure that the website is there. But more importantly, on Friday, there will be a blog up, and the podcast will have the blog and some extra information that you can go to readersentertainment.com. If you do have questions or comments, please do leave them at readersentertainment.com. We promise to get those over to Anthony and get any questions answered for you. So now, Blood Rock is the second in a trilogy. Now, can you tell us about the overall story arc?
Yeah, I can. The Dakota Frost series starts in a way which is a little different than many of the urban fantasy series that I've read, where you have, which are wonderful, and I love the genre, but typically you start with someone who's an experienced magician, they're a vampire slayer, they're a magical bounty hunter, and they're on a case, and then you're thrown into a lot, into all the action and intrigue that makes the genre fun. But I always wondered, how does someone get started at this? So in Frost Moon, the first book in the trilogy, it begins with the very first time that Dakota encounters some threat from the magical world. When the series starts, she's been a magical tattoo artist for years and has become extremely good at it, but that makes her the target of a serial killer who is attacking people who have magical tattoos, and also makes her the target of a werewolf that wants a magical tattoo. And Dakota isn't quite clear whether or not the werewolf is the next victim, or he might be the serial killer. And the book is about her trying to decide whether she's going to do his tattoo, and whether or not she's going to, or turn him over to the police, or whether or not she needs to try to protect him. And along the way, she encounters a young were-tiger girl, and she runs into a magician that targets her, and all sorts of other things. In the second books of the series, we start to see the fallout of this. Dakota in Blood Rock now has adopted the girl. She's dealing with the fallout of dealing with these people, with the serial killer, everything kind of starts to go attack in a heck in a handbasket. And when the magical graffiti attacks and begins targeting all these new friends that she's picked up. And the third book, Liquid Fire, follows this up where she's decided, no, I'm not going to take it anymore, and she's beginning to try to assemble allies that will help her stop magical catastrophes from happening. And as she does so, the act of trying to find allies involves her in a battle between fire magicians over the source of liquid fire, which is dragon's blood.
I love that. You know, we were talking a little bit earlier before the show started about, you know, how this story kind of lends to, you could see it being a comic book or a graphic novel. And I mean, all these different components to it, it makes it just this truly amazingly unique story. And I really love your heroine, and I think she's also very unique. So tell us more about Dakota Frost.
Well, she's brash, she's bold, and she's a bit out of her depth. Dakota is a tall tattoo artist with a mohawk, and she looks a little bit intimidating to some people. At the same time, she's a strong environmentalist, and despite her outward appearance, she's someone that really strongly believes in following the rules, and that frequently puts her in conflict with all the people around her. I got the idea for Dakota from seeing a lot of, you know, the typical urban fantasy covers where you have a heroine and she's in, you know, a midriff shirt or a tight dress or whatever, and you flip open the book and the character is wearing that in the first scene, and the rest of the book they're in jeans and a t-shirt, and it's like, well, or they're never dressed the way that they are on the cover.
Right.
And I thought, well, now wait a minute, what if the heroine was dressed the way that she is on the cover for a functional reason? So Dakota is a skin dancer. Her tattoos can come to life. She can make her vines become a shield. She can make an asp come off of her arm and attack somebody. She can make a butterfly lift off her skin and land on someone else's. But to do that, she has to show some amount of skin on her arms or her midriff or wherever, so that the magic can come off of them. So that was sort of the idea that I had of making the way that the character appeared a part of the function of her magic, and not just to sell a book cover, which kind of irritated me.
Right? Yeah, I love that. And I love that she's not what you would think of as your typical heroine. I mean, there's a lot of conflicts and layers to her. She's got a mohawk, but she follows the rules. She's got this strong sense of right and wrong, but she lives in, you know, what you would call, you know, counterculture. So it's a very intriguing character. And I also love the mythology, the magic mixed with the counterculture lifestyles. You know, it makes me wonder, you know, what kind of people read these stories?
All sorts of people, but not my mom.
Okay.
It's aimed at adult audiences, but all adult audiences. It's actually popular with the number of people at my church. I want it to be urban fantasy for tech geeks. So there's a fair amount of science kind of mixed in with the magic. I try not to put too much because that can be off-putting to some people. And there's a fair amount of counterculture. Dakota's particular counterculture is BDSM or the leather community and so on, but it's not something that's a large part of her life. She's familiar with these people, and a lot of those things are a backdrop to the series. But she's more of an observer and an ally to many different countercultures. And in the mythology of the series, counterculture is what brought magic out into the limelight. You know, in Harry Potter, for example, magic is completely hidden, and many other series, magic is completely hidden. And in this series, in the counterculture of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, they experimented with magic in the same way they experimented with different lifestyles, with drugs, with music, and so on, and dragged magic into daily life. And that's why Dakota can be a magical tattoo artist in her world, is because of the efforts of people to take this stuff which had been hidden and make it public. And as far as people who read that, it's really aimed at everyone. Dakota in the first book goes on a date with she's a tree hugger, and she goes on a date with someone who's very conservative. And so I try to represent all sorts of different perspectives and not just have the series be aimed at one particular ideology or perspective. I do know that some people are a little bit off-put by how brash Dakota is and her political views, which are not necessarily my political views. She's a little more extreme than I am, and a little, I think I'm a little more balanced than she is, but she's her own character. But I have heard some people say that can be a little bit off-putting, and that's not intentional. And I'm trying to work in further books of the series to really present a balanced world so that these books will be there for everyone.
Well, you know, I understand what you're saying about having a character be a little off-putting when they're that strong, but that's almost part of the allure for some books, to have a character be such a strong character that it really will elicit a response from your readers. I mean, you don't want readers to say, "Oh, I can't believe in this character," or, you know, or "I just, you know, I can't, you know, I just can't get with this character. It's just too strong." But I mean, you seem to be building a pretty good following. I mean, your character seems to be a little more, more apt to get people to actually say something and become involved with you. At least they care about her.
I don't want to ever blunt her attitude and maintain that. And that's something I have to, as I write the books, I really want Dakota to remain Dakota. But what I do want to do is force her to challenge her assumptions. So her father is a very conservative man. And in the second book, she reconciles with him. And in further books, she's forced to encounter him more and more often. And while she's never going to compromise her own principles, you know, it's good to see what happens when someone encounters someone with different, you know, principles that may not be a bad person, but they're a different person. And then that causes conflict. And I hope that's going to be something that readers will find very interesting.
Well, I think, you know, anytime you're going to add in some countercultures into that, it really opens up the opportunity to show that. And so, you know, I'm really encouraged, you know, to hear you say that, you know, they're not necessarily a bad person. It's just a different person. And I think that's a really good message to get across, you know, while you're also entertaining people. Now, I understand that you moved to the South Bay, you said around San Jose. Where were you before that?
So I'm an Atlanta native. I say that. I was born in Greenville, South Carolina, which the name of Dakota's hometown is actually the name of my subdivision in my hometown. So she is from where I am from. I just kind of filed the serial numbers off of the hometown just to make it a little bit different. And then I lived 18 years in Atlanta, and that's why it's set there. And it's a Frost Moon, the first book, is a period piece set in 2006, which doesn't seem so long ago, but it's set in a very concrete time in a very concrete place, and just about the last period of time that I lived in Atlanta. And I wanted to make it as real as possible so that when you see a werewolf, he's standing on a real street corner that you could go to, and that it seemed like it makes it more real and not just, you know, a cartoon where the backdrop is not real. I wanted to make it concrete, and that's why I set it in Atlanta. And I have an immense love for Atlanta, but I enjoy I work in the Bay Area, and so I had to sort of follow use my degree.
So those are very different. Those regions have very different cultures. I'm actually California native, and I'm transplanted over to Southern Kentucky. So I have an idea of, you know, the fact that they really are very different cultures. Do you find that as you're writing this series that you kind of have a mix of those cultures, or are you sticking with just Atlanta, or how do you live in one area and write about another? Do those things tend to cross over and mix?
Well, I live in one area and write in another by returning to Atlanta, you know, once or twice a year, roaming around with my camera, calling my friends in Atlanta, and doing a lot of research. But as for the culture, I had already been visiting the Bay Area. I interned out here about 15 years ago, and I had friends that were out here, so I was very familiar with the Bay Area. And in the third book, Liquid Fire, Dakota visits San Francisco and spends a great amount of time in the Bay Area, and it comes out that she and her former girlfriend, Savannah, had actually visited the Bay Area, say, 10 years earlier, and they see, you know, many of the things they'd seen before. So even before I'd taken the plot of Liquid Fire to San Francisco, I had already incorporated things. So Dakota wears a vest coat, which actually is based on one that I purchased in downtown San Francisco.
Oh, I love that. So you actually have it.
I actually have the two vest coats that Dakota wears. I actually own both of those. And so Dakota is based on several people that I know, and she's also her own character, but part of me and part of my wife and part of several of the people, little pieces here and there thrown in.
So how difficult is it to do world building for a book like this? Like, do you have to keep track of your own rules? Do you follow established mythology? How do you do that?
I don't feel like it's hard, but I think that's because I try to stay organized. I have a giant library and a huge spreadsheet detailing the books in the series and what I want to do with them. And one of the characters, Cinnamon, speaks in broken English, and I had a linguist put together a document that helps me keep her grammar straight so it can be consistent between the books. And I'm about to do the same with the magic, because as I write each book, I'm saying things about the magic that I need to be consistent later on. So I do have to work at it, but because I work at it, it's not super challenging to stay on top of it. As far as established mythology, I read a lot of established mythology, but the way that I handle it is I assume that the stories of established mythology are myths, and that there's some reality behind them, and I make up my own reality. And so you will have, people in the stories even commenting on the fact that there's some difference between, say vampires and werewolves or the myth of werewolves is like, oh, it's on the rising of the full moon. It's like, well, it doesn't have to be on the rising. Some werewolves, it's on the rising. Sometimes it's when it's overhead. Yeah, everyone's different. So I make up my own mythology, and then when you make that up, you have to track it.
Right, right. Again, goes back to establishing your own rules. I know a lot of urban fantasy readers that they really pay attention to that. They'll call you on it if you've created a rule and you break your own rule, because I've seen that happen with like Laurel K. Hamilton and a few others like that. So I think that's great that you actually, are really tracking that. And we're going to talk about...
I'll keep my fingers crossed that no one catches me.
Yeah, there you go. Now tell me something. Who are your influences? Be that writers, entertainers, who do you feel influences you and why?
I you just mentioned Laurel K. Hamilton. I was really inspired by the Anita Blake series. I have a big background in reading and writing science fiction. So science fiction is also very inspirational for me. And so I view urban fantasy as kind of almost like science fiction, in that you're taking it's not set off, you know, like The Hobbit, which I love The Hobbit too, but set off in some vague, you know, past, disconnected from our world. It's set in our very real world, and then you're bringing a fantastic element into it and saying, well, what is the consequence of allowing vampires in our society? So that's why I came from science fiction, but grew to love urban fantasy for that mix of the fantastic with everyday life. I really also enjoy things like fantasy and science fiction, adventure movies, anime, comic books. I follow and read a lot of those. And that's one reason I try to make my fiction very visual.
Uh-huh.
And I also throw in a mix of different philosophies. You know, there's Christian theology in the books. There's objectivism from Ayn Rand in the books. There's things from BDSM culture in the books. There's, you know, philosophy of science and scientific method in the books. And so I love kind of mixing all those into a giant stew and seeing how they run into each other. And I also do a lot of writing to music, you know, Tangerine Dream, Rush, Venus Hum, all sorts of other, you know, musical influences that help inspire scenes that I then later write.
Now, you talk a little bit about science. We've talked about how you know, have a spreadsheet and you track things. In your non-writing life, you're a computer scientist. How do you go from analytical to creative? Is that difficult?
I've never had a problem switching between the two. I see just computer science as a different expression of creativity. And, you know, sometimes you really have to, you know, any job you have to hack through different things that don't feel very creative. And the dirty secret of writing is, there's all sorts of parts of your book that will be fun, and then there'll be parts which, you know, you have to write to connect A to B. And no matter how you do that, you know, you will have to work through that. And one thing I've found is that it's actually harder sometimes to solve problems creatively, because in computers, the computer, you try to do something, and it breaks, and it tells you, and then you can work on it. But if you have a problem in your novel, you may not notice it until you're, you know, 10 chapters later, or maybe you have a completed draft and someone reads it and says, you know, I think I found a plot hole. And you're like, oh, no. That's because you have to fix it at that point. And, you know, I never have to worry about, you know, compiling my novel. It always is just, you know, you write it and it's there. But on the other hand, you have to track a lot in your head.
Right, right. I'll tell you, do the people that you work with know that you write urban fantasy? And if so, what do they think or say about that?
They're you know, generally interested. I have a small number of people at work that read urban fantasy, and that I have a stack of my books on the corner of my desk, and at one time I had even like a Dakota Frost poster, which it's not hanging up right now, but that's just because I don't have room. And I'm not shy about it, but I don't hide it, but neither do I really advertise it. And so most people are like, oh, that's really nice. How do you find time? And it's like, well, I take my laptop to breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and find every free moment. And, you know, but more or less, it's been a nice thing, and people are sometimes come to me for writing problems because they know that I'm a writer.
Right. Uh-huh. Now, can you give us an idea of what your next book will involve?
Liquid Fire takes Dakota to San Francisco, where she's trying simultaneously to gather allies in her fight to keep magic safe, and to follow up on a tattooing contest from Frostmoon, where it turns out someone owes her $1 million and they aren't paying up. And so she gets involved with a fire weaver, someone who can spin fire magic, who just she meets on the plane, and named Jewel Gracely. And Jewel unexpectedly becomes the target of a sequence of magical attacks, and Dakota has to defend her. And as she's trying to defend this new friend, she finds that there may be an ongoing battle for the source of the fire magic, which is liquid fire, dragon's blood, but dragons are thought to have been extinct. And so there's a big mystery as to what people are fighting over and why, and whether or not Dakota can help at all.
Now, is that going to be the last, or do you see this series continuing on?
I have, well, I would love to keep doing Dakota Frost as long as my my strength holds out. I have 21 books planned in the series, and but I'm breaking it into individual trilogies that are self-contained, so that you know I can give readers a series that's more or less, you know, they can read each book stands by itself, each trilogy thematically stands together, and that it's not necessary to say, you know, read everything to appreciate Dakota Frost. The next three books are going to be titled tentatively Spectral Iron, Phantom Silver, and Spiritual Gold, and they will return to San Francisco, head to Nevada, head to Japan, and of course keep on returning to Atlanta, which is Dakota's home.
I really do like that idea. I don't know if there's anybody really doing that, where you have, you know, you're releasing trilogies. So you have the single story book, and then you have this encapsulated arc over the trilogy, but then you can keep going. I really love that idea. So you'll have to, we'll have to have you come back, of course, and you'll have to let us know how that works out, because I'm really interested in that. Now, tell me something. Where can people find you online?
There's DakotaFrost.com. Has all things Dakota Frost. There's also facebook.com/DakotaFrost. I also have a personal blog at dresan.com, dresan.com, and I put my other writing that is not related to Dakota Frost. Usually I blog it there, so that, you know, fans of Dakota Frost can just go to dakotafrost.com and just see all the stuff related to that.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us tonight. And I do hope that you'll come back, you know, maybe when the next book comes out, and let us know how things are coming.
Well, thank you very much. It's been great.
And I want to thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio. Don't forget, you can find us at readersentertainment.com. Stop by, leave a comment. I mean, come on, you guys, magical graffiti. Tell me that does not intrigue you. That's just amazing. So, you know, stop by. We'll make sure that we have the links up so that you can go check out the website. I'm Sheila English, your host, and happy reading.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions. www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe, and welcome to our circle.